And welcome now to the midday for a Thursday. I'm Norman Gilliland, and the Madison Symphony is performing this weekend, and the usual times, Friday at 7:30, Saturday night at 8, and Sunday afternoon at 2:30. Featured on the program, Michael Osterley's Home, Tchaikovsky's Fifth Symphony, and then the centerpiece of it, the celebrated cello concerto of Edward Elgar, featuring soloist Sewell Bailey. And welcome to the midday, Sewell Bailey.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So just a word or two about the Elgar. It has become really one of the mainstays of the concerto and the cello and orchestra repertory, hasn't it?
Luckily for Jacqueline Dupre being placed on this earth, because before that it was very much not very much championed, even though Pablo Casals played it in his repertoire and a few others. The premiere was a disaster, under-rehearsed, conducted by Elgar himself. Interestingly, Felix Salmond, who was a wonderful English cellist, was the cellist, and he was so embarrassed by this kind of debacle of the premiere that he refused to teach it when he moved to New York City. So all Americans for decades were not privy to this wonderful concerto because he just wanted to pretend like it never happened. But thank goodness, you know, Jacqueline Dupre came around in the 1960s with her passion and her exuberance and her personality and virtuosity, not only placed it on the map, but put it alongside our other twin tower, which is the Dvorak cello concerto. So whenever I'm asked to play the Elgar or Dvorak, I know it's a celebratory concert.
And what do you like to bring to this concerto?
Oh, you know, the thing that makes this and also the Dvorak such a an experience is kind of when they wrote it in their lives. You know, he was sick and not doing well, Elgar. This was his last fully completed work that he wrote in his life.
So when would this be? As late as the 20s?
Right after World War One, okay. Like in that time period. Mm-hmm. There were remnants of World War One everywhere still happening. In fact, he could hear some bombings from his country home. When he came out of this illness in the hospital, this is when he first heard this melody that is the beginning of the piece that kind of defined even his own life. He said it's the never-ending melody. And he even told his family and friends, it's a very melancholic melody, that when I'm no longer here and you're outside and you hear that melody, don't worry, it's just me walking the English hillside, humming.
Which he did a lot of.
Yeah, and yeah. So, and just like life, the piece begins and ends the same way. Mm-hmm. The very opening of the piece, which is noblemente, noble and stately, the same exact presentation of music is at the very end, the circle of life. And it's in four movements, kind of a wonderful introduction, first movement, a kind of a bubbly, adolescent second movement, a lot of spiccato and fast playing. Third movement, one of the most glorious, slow, short movements anywhere. I have the same feeling in a really weird way as the fifth Mahler Symphony, the Adagietto, when I play this with orchestra. In fact, Tanya Miller and I were rehearsing it last night.
Yeah, guest director.
Right. And she said, "Shall we go back over the third movement?" I said, "No, let's leave it alone." In other words, I don't. It's so beautiful and so pure that I don't want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. We're just going to play it. And then, of course, the last movement, the fourth movement, kind of wraps up like most things do. It's a summary of the first three movements, pulling it all together. And it's quite a journey, quite an experience that one can only feel when walking one step at a time.
Literally one step at a time. Again, Elgar out there in the English countryside.
That's right.
And the high ground and pastoral English setting.
Yes.
Well, let's go from Elgar to a more solidly 20th century composer, Ernest Bloch, and you have recorded his Shlomo some time ago, and that's another work like the Elgar for cello and orchestra.
Well, what I love about the Elgar, and in fact, The Michael Dougherty piece that was written for me, the one that won the Grammy Award last year, The Tales of Hemingway, was written right after he heard me play the Elgar.
Oh.
And he remarked about the breadth and the earthiness of my cello that was built in 1693 in Venice, Italy. It's a very large instrument that has what I would say the aural brush strokes of a great artist. So you hear texture in my cello and extra wood. And again, the word is breadth. And I think that comes through significantly in the Elgar. And if you're going to play the Shlomo, this is the thing that I also love about it, is that in this work, I'm telling a story as the center instrument, but it spans beautifully the range of the cello, which is the most like the human voice. So within 2 or 3 minutes, you've heard you've been into the clouds with the angels, as well as in the depths of hell with the bass of this cello, which is, I think, unparalleled.
And we'll hear the first several minutes of Shlomo with my guest Zuhal Bailey as the cellist in the orchestra here.
This is the Indianapolis Symphony. June Merkel conducting.
All kinds of effects there with the cello played by Zuhal Bailey there in Shlomo, the work of Ernst Bloch with the Indianapolis Symphony. And he's my guest for the midday today. We'll have, of course, our 12:30 quiz question, too, and it's cello-related, as a matter of fact. I can tell you that much. You have played, as many contemporary performers have lately, in some unusual, some non-traditional venues.
Oh, yes.
And San Quentin. Highly, highly unusual.
Well, we can go back 10 seconds and I'll give you the backstory. Is that, you know, as a young person, when I was 19 and 18, I started traveling. I would go to these towns and they would show me the hall, and it'd be about 500 people, 500 seat hall. And I was there for 3 days. Having lunches with their donors, et cetera, et cetera. But I had so much free time, I would ask them, can I go play for a school? May I go play for a retirement center? May I go play for people? What can I do? Well, this was kind of unheard of at the time. So they said, well, we can try. We'll call a school and see if they'll let you in. And I would give these many concerts for these people that didn't know to go to the concert. And I started realizing that at the end of any given 3-day visit, I was playing for probably between 3,000 and 5,000 people outside of that 500-seat venue.
Right.
That I was invited to play for. Not only did that affect so many people in ways that they weren't ready for, meaning they would always stop and they had never heard a cello sound before, the way it affected them. Generally, it was the kids that would stop and drag the parents over to hear me play wherever I was playing.
Good for them.
But it also affected ticket sales. And this is a business tool that I started realizing that, you know, you have to get out there and show people what they're missing. And so what you're alluding to is just 2 days ago. I flew in last night. I was performing with the Marin Symphony in San Francisco. And about 4 months ago, I was there and we were driving by this very overwhelming looking building. And I said, is that San Quentin Prison? And they said, sure. And I said, do people perform for the prisoners? And she said, I'm not quite sure, probably not. Okay, so long story short, I played for them 2 days ago.
How did that go?
Well, it was quite an experience. I never tried to set the bar of what it will and will not be, but something very interesting happened. I played some Bach, unaccompanied Bach, solo cello, and after one of the movements, I noticed that one of the prisoners was incredibly overwrought and overwhelmed, I stopped and I looked up, and someone was handing him tissues, and I said, the word is bawling, and I said, clearly something's happening. And he stood up and he said his name and his number, and he said, while choking back tears, I've never heard a cello before. I've been in this prison for 26 years and I haven't cried in 27 years. And I want to know why this sound is making me break up. And I didn't know what to say because everyone looked at me, the other prisoners. And I said, well, you're not alone. Music affects us. And I said, I will now ask everybody a question. What is the opposite of love? And they yelled, hate. I said, no, the opposite of love is indifference. And I said, when you stop feeling is when you stop being human. So what I can tell you is that, welcome back. I said, and you know, enjoy this feeling. And it shakes me daily too in different ways on whatever I'm ready or not ready for. And he thanked me and he sat down and I continued to play, and he came up and gave me a big hug afterwards and just walked away. And you know, that's amazing. I mean, that right there is the power of music. It's the power of whatever music is supposed to be, whether it be the soundtrack to something joyous or a healing element. And you know, in my own life, I didn't know this at age four when I began, but my parents told me that when I wrapped my arms around that cello, at four, that I shut my eyes and I played the sounds of the cello and holding it with all my might for 15 minutes as a four-year-old and didn't want to stop. And they joke, we never had to ask you to practice, we had to ask you to stop practicing.
Well, that's a great story.
So that was San Quentin 2 days ago.
Well, San Quentin did have an alumnus among its...
Isn't that Johnny Cash?
Well, yes, but also Henry Cowell, the composer, spent time in San Quentin teaching, he was an inmate, and while so, teaching music to groups of, musically inclined prisoners.
Right. Well, I have to say that the prisoners that were at my event were seemingly incredibly intelligent, well-read, thoughtful, sincere. A lot of them had been in there for a long time, which means whatever mistake they made was probably in their teens, which is sad to me. And they really were very eloquent in their questions and asking me genuinely to come back and please play some more next time.
Well, we'll look forward to hearing some more of your forays into those places. Now, you won a Grammy for this Tales of Hemingway, a 2015 work by Michael Dougherty, and it is a totally Hemingway-oriented set of four pieces.
This is the piece that was written after Michael Dougherty heard the Elgar Cello Concerto. Interestingly, they're both in four movements. Interestingly, even the movements, the way they're set up, the first is a lyrical movement, the second is a visceral movement, the third, Old Man in the Sea, is a beautiful, reminiscent movement of great color and texture, and the last movement, like the Elgar, is kind of a summation of it. From whom the bell tolls, the Spanish War, is something I think would be interesting to play now because it shows the capacity at how the cello can be a percussive instrument as well as a vivacious explorer of sound in comparison to what you just heard, the Bloch's Shlomo.
Has some decay to it, as bells so often do. For Whom the Bell Tolls, that was the second of the four movements of a work from 2015 by Michael Dougherty, Tales of Hemingway for cello and orchestra. The cellist, my guest today, Zuhal Bailey, who is performing with the Madison Symphony tomorrow night, Saturday night, and Sunday afternoon, performing the Elgar Cello Concerto. And that was, you say, a Grammy sweep there for that CD. Three Grammys out of that.
Well, it was a remarkable journey all the way through. I mean, I usually work with decomposing composers. And when I was asked to work with the wonderful Michael Dougherty, of course, I jumped at the opportunity with the Nashville Symphony and Giancarlo Guerrero. The piece was written after he heard the Elgar Cello Concerto. He heard my cello. He was able to realize this dream to write a piece on Hemingway. And we caught lightning in a bottle, that's for sure.
I would say so. Well, thanks for sharing some of your music and insights.
Thank you for your time.